Amazon Business honors Ricardo Gurgel, owner of Veggie Root Tavern. This week, Ricardo saved big and used Amazon Business to help his team buy commercial deep fryers at a quantity discount. Because even veggies can be fried.
I'm gonna need 2 orders of fried fiddleheads.
With business buying easier than before, Ricardo now uses his extra time to focus on growing something big. Buy smarter, dream bigger. Visit Amazon Business, your partner for smart business buying. Mmm, fiddleheads. Yum.
Tired of long waits and rushed care at the ER and urgent care clinic? Next time, stay home and let Dispatch Health bring the power of the hospital to you.
I call Dispatch Health. A care team of medical professionals actually come to your house.
They're the same caliber of people that you would see if you were at a hospital or an urgent care.
Dispatch Health can treat most non-life-threatening emergencies.
They can do the x-rays, they can do stitches.
Urinary tract infections, blood tests, urinalysis, ultrasound.
It's almost everything that they can do at the ER.
You never feel rushed. They're there for you and only you.
I felt like their only patient.
And it costs no more than a trip to urgent care because Dispatch Health is covered by most insurance, including Medicare. See if we serve your home at dispatchhealth.com.
Dispatch Health really went above and beyond.
It's wonderful to have care come to your home.
House calls are back, and they're better than ever. Learn more at dispatchhealth.com.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
He's colossal, stupendous. One might even go so far as to say he's mediocre.
This is our Signal Storm podcast.
Elon Musk has completed his takeover of communist Twitter. The reason why I call it communist Twitter, my friends, is you may or may not know, some of the employees that work at Twitter were captured by Project Veritas on film claiming how they are avowed communists, and they enjoy silencing free speech on their little platform. So Elon Musk has taken over that platform, and he bought it for a pretty penny. $44 billion. So a lot of these leftists will be made rich by this purchase, but Elon is making the most of this, and he's, you may or may not know this, but Twitter is the basically online Bible for left-wingers. In the press, out of the press, they populate Twitter, and they've enjoyed it because Twitter has been silencing conservatives and dialing back their voice, and Twitter loves that. The people who populate Twitter and are fans of Twitter in the biased press, they're communists at heart anyway. So when it was learned that Elon Musk was going to be purchasing this platform, this censorship platform, a lot of people started to worry. Whoa, we can't have free speech coming back to America. We worked so very hard on the left to demonize and silence free speech. We've almost got the conservatives where we want them. We've almost taken over America, almost flushed it all down the toilet, got rid of the Constitution, got rid of their protections. We've actually demonized what it is to be conservatives. We've actually got the FBI doing our work for us, targeting conservatives while we left-wingers break the law left and right, and the FBI turns a blind eye. Oh, yeah, it's pretty damn scary. So here comes Elon Musk, smart guy. Don't get me wrong. Now, of course, he's, because of his electric car business, he's really in bed with communist China. He really has to give those communist Chinese a whole bunch of backslapping and a whole bunch of adulation, and he maybe can't even say what he really means. And, you know, he basically saying Taiwan should accept some communist rule. Are you kidding me? Anyway, Elon Musk walks into the Twitter headquarters last week, and he's carrying a sink, you know, a sink that goes into your house or into your bathroom, right? So this is the tweet he put out. He's walking to the door, and he puts out this tweet, entering Twitter HQ, let that sink in. So for over that joke, they just melted down in the left-wing Twitterverse. It was just a complete and utter conniption fit. Glenn Greenwald, who's a lefty, a liberal, but is an actual journalist and believes in fairness, Glenn Greenwald says, I can't even calculate how much money I'd pay to read the Slack chat of Twitter employees today. Definitely would pay extra to read the thoughts of, quote, content moderators. Content moderators are the ones who target conservatives to silence their speech over there at Twitter. So where Elon Musk has said it's not going to be a free-for-all on Twitter, he has said he will reverse the ban of President Donald J. Trump on Twitter. And many people speculate he's going to relax some of these restrictions. Now, I mentioned the left wing was melting down over this entrance with the sink. What's her name? Juliet Kayyem? I have no idea who this twit is. She says she's a Kennedy School at CNN analyst, consultant, author, national security expert. Uh-huh. Sure. Well, of course she works at CNN. This is fundamentally cruel, she says. Whatever the masters of the universe are doing with this website, lots and lots of people, not fancy people, just people with kids and houses and vacation plans and who make companies run and rich men richer, will lose their livelihoods. Well, why would that be, Juliet? Why would anybody at left-wing communist Twitter, you know, the communists, the stinking, filthy communists with families, the stinking, filthy communists with kids? You mean they haven't aborted their kids? Really? Isn't that what left-wing communist nutbags do, Juliet Kayyem? They're going to lose their livelihoods. Well, why? Well, why? Unless they don't want to work for a guy who says, sorry, you can't be communist anymore. Sorry, you can't curtail free speech anymore. If you want to curtail free speech, get your ass out the door. You know, Elon Musk may say that, and then those little communists are going to lose their little itty bitty jobs, Juliet, but it's going to be their choice because they value and love suppression of free speech, of Americanism so much. They just can't stand to work at a free company or a freedom promoting company. So forgive me, Juliet Kayyem, I have no sympathy whatsoever for communists. Zero sympathy for communists. Why? Because they're dirtbags. Communists are dirtbags who don't believe in human freedom. Folks, the amount of data that we are giving to these social media companies is scary. It is frightening. And I have a guest coming up next that's going to tell you just how much data we have voluntarily surrendered to the aforementioned dirtbags. It's all coming up on the Salcedo Storm podcast.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Does the state of the economy have your head spinning? Let American Medical Plans relieve one burden, health insurance. American Medical Plans specializes in under 65 health insurance plans that have zero copays and no deductibles. You choose your doctors, you choose your hospitals. These plans have nothing to do with your income and are 30 to 60% less than Obamacare. If you're paying too much for your own health insurance, call American Medical Plans. You deserve better. They will customize a plan managed and chosen by you, not the government.
A liberty-loving American takes on Washington, Hollywood, and the whole media establishment. He's Chris Salcedo. Join his fight. Tune in to the Chris Salcedo Show every weekday afternoon on Newsmax.
The establishment media is out of touch with the real things real Texans care about. Real news for real Texans. That's what Texas Scorecard does every day. Learn more and subscribe for free. TexasScorecard.com/Chris.
Folks, let's bring on our guest, David Dunmoyer. He's the campaign director for Better Tech for Tomorrow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which serves to develop technology policy that promotes morality and civic virtue. What a concept, right? Protects the privacy, safety, security, autonomy, and dignity of Texans and preserves Texas culture and values. First off, Mr. Dunmoyer, welcome to the Salcedo Storm podcast. Secondly, how do you fit all that on a business card?
Chris, well, thanks so much for having me. You know, I leave that to our smarter comms and marketing minds here. I just get the chance to talk about our policy issues, and I leave the branding to them. And, you know, that's what they said I ought to put in the bio tagline, right?
Works for me, man. Look, I was reading this article that you wrote for the Canon, and it is eye-opening. Folks, the name of the article is "It's Scary How Much Big Tech Knows About You." You wrote this in the beginning of October. And I'm going to start with, I guess, comparatively speaking, the smaller potatoes first, because you detailed two of the big boys, really, in big tech, Facebook and Google. Let's start with Facebook. And this is one of the first social media sites where people were just willy-nilly just giving out their information to goodness knows who. Tell us what type of information Facebook is gathering.
Yeah, no, Chris, I appreciate that framing. I mean, it's important to recall, too, that Facebook's only been around for less than two decades at this point. And really fascinating to see how it transitioned from, you know, the Zuckerberg college dorm idea of connecting folks. And really the whole business model shifted around the time of 2008, 2009 to data. For them, it's the new oil and it's the commodity that keeps the machine running for Facebook, you know, for better or, as we're seeing now, really for worse for the user side of things. And so, yeah, to your point, this article I wrote, it was really spawned by work and research we're doing on a digital bill of rights, which I'm happy to get into. But for the sake of this piece, there are a number of social media sites, as you list Facebook and Google, that allow you to download your personal information. And so in this article, it has the links that allows you, anyone who's listening, to access whatever files that Facebook has on you that they're willing to share with you. So I want to be clear, while I'll get into how scary it is, how much they know, this is only the tip of the iceberg. And so Facebook makes it clear you can go to download your personal information, that they're providing only a snapshot of what they have. And of course, the list is exhaustive. We could take 30 minutes on this alone, Chris, but it's things that you might expect, such as your search history or interactions that you have with people. But it gets really granular in that even information that you've deleted from your Facebook account, let's say it's an ex partner that you had of yours, thinking those pictures are gone. Well, they're not. Messages that you have dating as far back as you use Facebook Messenger, all that is stored there. There's advertisement profiles that companies have on you, that Facebook has on you, that's based on your behavioral information. So that could be how long are you looking at a specific post or an advertisement, and they're using inferences, using highly sophisticated algorithms to determine, okay, David watched this for this amount of time here, and it's compounded over time, so we know he's a fan of college football. And it gets more granular than that. We start getting into the even scarier aspects. It's political proclivity as well. And so, you know, one of the things to be mindful of, if you look at what's happening with environmental social governance, where there are businesses and individuals who are discriminated against for either partaking in the economy of fossil fuels and reliable energy sources. Well, if these tech companies have robust political profiles on who you are, who you're likely to vote for, it's really not outlandish to make a snap conclusion that going down the road of this woke cancel culture, they have this information on you that could be weaponized.
Folks, what he's talking about is a social credit score. This is a social credit score is basically where those who are in positions of power and authority say, well, if you don't vote the right way and you don't support the right people, then you're going to be ostracized from society. They do this in communist countries and socialist countries. And they're the left wing, the Democrats, are trying to bring it here to the United States. Pretty much reading your right there, David.
Oh, absolutely. And a great setup, too, because, you know, what does the CCP do? Well, it's a state of surveillance, and they're monitoring you with cameras and along your normal daily tasks, whatever they might be. And, you know, Facebook, again, I encourage all listeners to download your information. When I downloaded my file, I was surprised to see a lot of things, but one in particular was how precise all of my geolocations were. They could map me down to the building where I was when I accessed the app. And so just thinking about, you know, if we believe the tech executives are all angels, this isn't an issue. But we have critical thinking enough to recognize that in the wrong hands, this information can be used for real harm. And currently, you know, we're focused on Texas, of course. Texas doesn't have any comprehensive data privacy laws on the books. And so this is definitely an impetus to consider, as we're advocating for comprehensive data privacy laws for Texans, so that we can have data as our private property.
I am so glad. I'm so glad I left Facebook. I left for political reasons because they were censoring folks. But that means they still have a file on me. It's just not as thick, right?
Correct. Yeah. And in our research, we outline, there are ways to completely unplug from Facebook. However, I will add that even deactivated accounts on Facebook, they still have information on you. And what's more, this isn't in the file I downloaded, but it's, you know, a lot of research has been done on this, that it's not just that Facebook is tracking, again, your likes and your comments and the messages that you have. But they use what are called cookies. So when you're searching a different website, this can be a completely different business. Facebook has a lot of licensing and ties with these third-party companies, so they can track and monitor how you're engaging on a completely different website and cull that information to house on your data profile. And so, again, for deactivated accounts, we're seeing what you would assume to be a massive encroachment on your presumed privacy because they're always watching.
Right. And then do you sign that away when you sign up?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And that's one where, you know, we definitely get some, I don't want to say pushback, but some, you know, questions from even users on as well. There's the terms of service. And what I'd like to say about that, you know, to answer your question, yes, in the terms of service, we are effectively signing a lot of that agency away. But only, I believe the statistic is only 12% of Americans can actually understand, because it's so dense with legal language and confusing verbiage. Only 12% of Americans can understand what's in there. And what's more, it would take something like a month and a half to read through, because they're so lengthy, all the terms of service all the way through for the companies and the social media companies that most users are engaging in. So it really is opaque, I think is the right word. You know, there's no transparency. We don't necessarily know what we're getting ourselves into. And so this window into downloading your information is at least a start to get a picture of just how sweeping it is.
It's amazing. The amount, folks, your search history, what you like, what you don't like, your political affiliation, they've all got it at their fingertips. And this is how they can plug those algorithms in and silence and dial back all of our posts. That's why I left Facebook. If they identified you as a conservative, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't like you very much, and so his algorithms dial back your reach. So even if you have a million followers, you're not hitting a million followers or friends on Facebook. So this is really a big issue for me. And folks, this is Facebook, an alleged American company. Imagine what they're doing with the Chinese apps like TikTok. I mean, before we get on to the big one, which is also China affiliated, David, talk about TikTok and what you know about TikTok.
Yeah, well, Chris, I mean, there's so many things to talk about there. I mean, one is, you know, when even BuzzFeed, the center left progressive bastion, is reporting that Donald Trump, when he talked about TikTok back in 2017, and that there are massive security risks and concerns with having ByteDance, their parent company, located in China, where they have access to our information. Let me be very clear, for folks using TikTok, there is a very high chance that when you're accepting those terms of service, that the CCP can look into the data that they're obtaining on users. And in the TikTok piece, Chris, it's there's some really sad and dark stuff happening there too. One of the other areas we look at, you know, you talk about being off social media, and one of our policy directors who's our senior fellow in technology policy, he made that same choice. And I'll tell you, the more I get into this, the more I'm recognizing the need for myself to get off. Because on TikTok, you're seeing kids who are 11, 10 years old. For example, a 9-year-old, I believe 9 years old in Texas, her name is Alani. And on TikTok, they push different trends and different topics of the day up in the algorithmic feed of kids who, by the way, are not supposed to be using this without parent verification. But there are these aggressive challenges that are being posted. And one of them is called the Blackout Challenge. And this 9-year-old girl saw this video where it was encouraging users to suffocate themselves just up to the point of asphyxiation and blacking out, and post a video of it to show that you made it out alive. And well, Chris, we know how this kind of stuff ends, and there have been countless kids who have died from these challenges. And so it's the not only the security piece, which my goodness, we could talk about that for quite some time, but then the dangerous content that's being posted there. And that's not even getting into the addictiveness of it, the anxiety inducing nature of it, and how it's causing more depression and really just unrest throughout our country. It's certainly hasn't done any good for kids in the totality of things. And that's only one piece of the TikTok puzzle.
Yeah, a communist app doing what communists do, destroying lives. David Dunmoyer is our guest. He's the campaign director for Better Tech for Tomorrow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Before we leave Facebook, this is how they get you. They monetize you. They had people that built up their social media presence on Facebook, they monetized it. People built up followings there, and then it. But now that you're making money, they're like, "Oh, great! Now we're going to change the rules in the middle of the game. We're going to ignore Section 230, and we're going to start editing your content. And if you don't start saying what we want you to say, then we're going to dial back your users, and we're going to destroy your livelihood or your followers, and we're going to destroy your livelihood." And isn't that the devious part of what Facebook, Twitter, Google are doing?
Oh, absolutely, Chris. And, you know, one of the things that on its face is a massive concern. And when you look even further into this, too, there is a concerted effort on the part of the Biden administration to bludgeon or, you know, coerce these companies into doing the will of the government. So already we're not even in First Amendment issues. We're talking about the government, a public actor who is telling, for example, working with between Fauci, the Biden administration, and Mark Zuckerberg to censor and moderate certain posts regarding the origins of the coronavirus, or on questions, rightful questions that Americans should be able to explore about the vaccine. And it's intentional. I mean, Jen Psaki even publicly said that they are working with tech companies to end misinformation. And so we're talking about, yes, the CCP threat of communism entering the U.S. Well, we're talking about a presidential administration that's using its bully pulpit to moderate content on a private platform to prevent free expression in the U.S. of A. And if that doesn't give concern, I mean, I don't know what does.
Yeah, right there with you. Folks, we're talking to David Dunmoyer. He's the campaign director for Better Tech for Tomorrow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Let's get over to Google. Google, in my mind, we left YouTube, which is owned by Google, because they kept on censoring me. And they said, if you have one more strike, let me save you the trouble. So I left. Google is amassing, and this is a company, a so-called American company, that is so in bed with communist China. It is scary. They have Chinese values. They have communist Chinese, outlook on suppression. And to call them an American company, I think is an insult to America. Because Google is really maniacal, in my opinion. But the amount of data that Google has on each and every American is astonishing.
Yeah, Chris, to break down the numbers, I went ahead and I pulled. Google has an option also that allows you to download, again, a snapshot of what information they have on you, just to give some perspective here. On my Google account, which includes my Google Plus as well as my Gmail, they had almost 18 gigabytes of data, which equates to about 13 million Word documents of personal information they have on me. And you look into the kinds of information they have. You know, we talked about Facebook, but to your point, Google is a Goliath in this sense. And, you know, just to kind of crystallize this with a story, you know, we're at a think tank, and so we have a lot of people that like to, you know, hands-on work through issues. And so I send out this link to download information to a couple of friends here at TBPF. And one of my colleagues, he downloads it and realizes, oh my goodness, Google has tracked exactly the trip that I took when I went to Ireland with my family. And we're talking about when he left his hotel, at what time, how fast he was walking, what mode of transportation he took from the hotel to the restaurant, how long he spent at the restaurant, and the list goes on. His entire vacation was tracked by Google when he was overseas. And the important aspect behind this is that, again, we're pushing a digital bill of rights in Texas to make sure we have control over what data is given to companies or what isn't. So this idea that we can opt out and say enough is enough, I don't want you having my data. But what we're looking at now, before we have this legislative solution, which we're really confident there's a good chance is going to get passed, is this idea that users really need to know what these companies have on them. And so another example here, you know, you start looking down the Google information profile they have on you. And, you know, I'm guilty of this on certain accounts, rather than typing in a username and password when I'm going on a different business. Let's say it's a, you know, a graphic design site. I can sign in with Google. And Google makes it clear that the second you do this, you are now giving these sites and apps access to some of your Google account data. So it's not just Google. Google, of course, is housing this, but it's who Google is giving the information to afterward. I can't confidently say based on this, you know, piece of investigative journalism, all the companies are giving it to, but I don't think it's unrealistic to assume that of the folks we don't know that are receiving our data, it can be harrowing. There can be real consequences with it. And just as another example, there's a concept in the data privacy space that's called a data broker. And this is really important to understanding the big picture here, because you have the big companies like Google and Facebook that are just increasingly impressive with how much information they can take on us. But from there, the data brokers are seen as the third party, which will often scrape your existing data, what exists on the sites like Google and Facebook, use other sites to buy additional information and build out a unique behavioral profile on the person based on their data. What's more, data brokers are they're unapologetic about what they use this data profile on you for. They sell it to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And they've bragged about having the data profiles of deployed troops that are overseas.
Oh, wow.
These data brokers have given information to criminals who have used it to stalk a victim and kill them. It's not hyperbole to say that what we've seen already is scary beyond belief. And that's, again, this is just the tip of the iceberg with it.
Absolutely incredible. Let's talk about solutions. And then I'm going to talk about Section 230 and the menace that the big tech social media folks are. If you're talking to a typical American user, they use Google. I don't anymore. I use DuckDuckGo as a search engine, but that doesn't protect me because I still have Google accounts. If how can folks defend themselves, and if they start now, or is this genie just out of the bottle and it's now you've got to claw back the data that you've already given up?
Yeah, so it's a fantastic question. I'll answer, you know, directly first in terms of what we can do now, and then also talk about what we're working on to make this even better. So currently there are steps that users can take, and for example, on Google, you do have the ability to make sure that your location information is not being tracked while you're using apps. So that's a great example of, you know, you have to go through three or four layers of the Google privacy site to actually find this, but there are some tools that exist. And Apple, you know, I'll call a compliment where I can. Apple shifted about a year and a half ago to a model where for a lot of the apps now, you actually have to opt in to having your data collected and tracked if you're using an Apple device. And so it's, you know, there are quick Google searches, or DuckDuckGo is even better. DuckDuckGo searches on ways that you can enhance your data privacy. And I want to be clear that this, to your point, Chris, this doesn't mean that no information is being tracked on you. Because the next step, aside from making sure users are, I'd say here's the process, making sure that users are aware of how much data is being collected. And, you know, in my article, I break down the ways you can do that on two of the big sites. To finding the resources that exist to ensure that you have all the privacy options that you possibly can enlist activated on your various accounts. And I might add to that by saying, I'd also encourage listeners to not spend as much time on social media. There are so many reasons why. One of them is the privacy aspect, of course. But finally, you know, solutions, looking ahead here. So five states have implemented what's called a digital bill of rights. And so in the digital bill of rights, we're advocating for one here in Texas. What that would provide is a number of rights for users that they can exercise without fear of being discriminated against by technology companies or large data collection businesses.
And easy access. I mean, they got to make it easy because, as you mentioned already, They make it three or four or five steps just to get one action, and they do it on purpose. They layer it on purpose.
Correct. And that's a huge piece. And that's an area where we're confident Texas can really lead on, because the first right that's integral to users having more agency and control is the right to know. And rather than, okay, you know, a user has to go through 15 different hoops and jumps to access this, no, we're arguing that it is the de facto mechanism that users are given these reports on what information companies have on them. And further, to know not just what Google has, but where's Google giving it, or what are the other companies that have access to this information. And so that's the animating principle of transparency.
Now, will it be a negative or a positive? What I mean by that is, will they say, we need to ask permission every single time we give your data to somebody else? We need to ask your permission. It's your data and it's information about you. So if we're going to sell it, we need to give you the option, knowing that it's going to be sold.
Absolutely. Chris, you set me up perfectly, because the next piece is, it's the right to opt out of having that data collected. So the right to know is every user, no matter what, even if you've opted out, you know what information companies have on you. But the next piece to really tie that in is the right for a user to easily access a button that is on the front page. And we have to be very clear about this when we're crafting legislation. Not that it can be anywhere, or that it has to be in a reasonable place, that it's, no, it's front and center. A user clicks a button or some kind of opt-out feature that allows them to say, no, I do not want my data collected on this website. And then the idea would be that the company has to adhere to this. And if they don't, there are fines and penalties associated with that. This would be a deceptive trades clause aspect behind it. So the right to know, the right to opt out, and a big one here is the right to have any personal information that you don't want out there retroactively, currently, in the future, to be deleted. And so if you see in that report you get, oh my goodness, this information is out there on a trip that I went on, and I really don't want this being accessed by other actors, then you have the right to delete that. Because after all, Chris, I think we all agree that data should be the private property of the user. I'm creating it. It is my product. And so I should be able to say, no, thank you. I don't want this out there.
Right.
And so those are some of the major aspects behind it. But, you know, you've hit on this too. One of the big pieces is that we have Section 230, and we have other longstanding either federal or state legislation that's either completely out of date or doesn't take into account how fast technology has moved and evolved. And it's important that Texas lead on this in a way where the fines are built in a way to where tech companies, they have to adhere, rather than it be so weak. They're like, okay, well, I'm going to flout any responsibility here because I can make more money collecting your data and I can just foot the bill. It needs to be done in a way that's strong enough to actually incentivize them to take our data privacy seriously.
Right. And that begs the question, you know, how would you verify? I mean, you could click that button on the Google page and they could say, okay, he doesn't want to be tracked, he doesn't want his data sold, but we've got it anyway, we're going to sell it. How would we verify? And I think that's another trick. But last question I have for you is concerning Section 230 that we brought up. These big tech platforms are behaving, as we've already alluded to, as publishers. Now, that doesn't meet, even though Section 230 is outdated, that doesn't meet the current definition of what these platforms are supposed to be. They're supposed to be open platforms and not held legally liable if somebody gets on there and says something that's bat guano crazy or legally liable. They can't be sued. But the minute they start editing your content, deleting your content, or flagging it as something that they don't agree with, then they are a publisher and they should be sued. And what is the major impediment that you see as to the reason why Congress and the state of Texas will not allow, elected leaders will not allow the people to go after these big tech companies that are basically misbehaving? They're behaving as publishers, but getting immunity as platforms.
Yeah, no, that's the million-dollar question right there. And speaking to the federal level first, I mean, you know, we're a state-based think tank, and we believe in federalism, the idea that those powers not enumerated specifically to the federal government are reserved for the states. And so, you know, we just have a natural cynicism that really anything's going to get done substantively in Congress. Hopefully, you know, after November, we see some shifts that make it more realistic. But I'll say right now, you're seeing folks on the left saying we need Section 230 reform because conservative speech is bad and we need to censor it further. And of course, folks on the right who are rightfully pointing out, hey, we're censored to the tune of 20-1 folks on the left. And so we need to modify Section 230 because it's being used as a bludgeon to basically just quash any free speech or free expression. And so there is, in a wild, you know, turn of fate, there is agreement on both sides that Section 230 is outdated and its intended purpose, which, by the way, Section 230 was created as part of the Communications Decency Act, and the goal was to make sure the content was safe for kids online. But the entirety of that act was struck aside from Section 230. And so even the intended goal, as you know, you mentioned, Chris, has completely gone by the wayside, and now it's just a means for tech companies to hide behind this shield. And as an example, in Texas, there was a case brought last year where Facebook is notorious for not taking action to protect sex and human trafficking victims. And there have been so many cases where either through algorithms pushing, you know, suggested friends or suggested groups, that these young girls end up being sex and human trafficked through Facebook. And in response, Facebook always says, well, we have Section 230 immunity. So this isn't our problem. And so it's not just a matter of, which is a huge one, the First Amendment and free speech aspects, but then there's also the human health and safety of people who are, you know, being preyed upon on these apps, and Facebook can say, well, it's not my circus, not my monkeys.
Well, as you know, those who are being most often accused of being groomers are among the left among us. And so maybe that fruit doesn't fall too far from the leftist tree when it comes to Zuckerberg and Facebook. David Dunmoyer, he is the campaign director for Better Tech for Tomorrow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. If folks want more information, David, where can they go?
Of course. Well, you can check out more information on tech policy and all of our other issues at texaspolicy.com. We have plenty of commentary, op-eds, and research, and you can find all that there and more.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the visit.
Thank you, Chris. Always appreciate you.
And that's going to put a wrap on this edition of the Salcedo Storm Podcast, my friends. Two websites to visit, if you will. Head on over to TexasScorecard.com, TexasScorecard.com, for all the news that's important to Texas. And if it's important to Texas, it's going to be important to these United States. Also, check out ChrisSalcedo.com. Once you are there, lots of things to do. Check out how to drop me an email. Check out how to drop me a voicemail. Check out how to book me for a speech if you want me to talk to your company, your organization. All the deets are right there. That's what the kids say. All the deets are right there. Also, follow the Chris Salcedo shows on radio, KSEV. In the mornings, there's an app for that so you can hear it all over the country. Also on television, on Newsmax TV, 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 5 Eastern, Monday through Friday. Don't forget, always at home here on the Salcedo Storm Podcast. So until we visit again, my friends, remember this. A society's worth isn't measured by how much power is stolen by an out-of-control government, but rather how much power is reserved for you and me. In short, we the people. See ya.
Tired of long waits and rushed care at the ER and urgent care clinic? Next time, stay home and let Dispatch Health bring the power of the hospital to you.
I call Dispatch Health. A care team of medical professionals actually come to your house.
They're the same caliber of people that you would see if you were at a hospital or an urgent care.
Dispatch Health can treat most non-life-threatening emergencies.
They can do the x-rays, they can do stitches,
urinary tract infections, blood tests, urinalysis, ultrasound.
It's almost everything that they can do at the ER.
You never feel rushed. They're there for you and only you.
I felt like their only patient.
And it costs no more than a trip to urgent care because Dispatch Health is covered by most insurance, including Medicare. See if we serve your home at dispatchhealth.com.
Dispatch Health really went above and beyond.
It's wonderful to have care come to your home.
House calls are back, and they're better than ever. Learn more at dispatchhealth.com.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You too could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.